Once again, I'm Jason Amatic. Without further ado, please help me welcome our first speaker, Ms. Chelsea P. from Winter Haven, Florida.
All right. Hey.
Hi, my name is Chelsea. I'm an addict.
Hi, Chelsea.
So I'm really glad to be here in Mississippi. Like you said, I'm from Florida. I live in Central Florida, so this isn't like my backyard. Came a little ways to be here, and I'm so excited that I got the opportunity to do that. Well, what was I going to say? No. I just celebrated 4 years, so I have 4 years clean. And I've been around the program for longer than 4 years, but it took me a while to get honest enough with myself to realize this is exactly where I'm supposed to be, and I need to quit fighting and just stay. So I have 4 years, and I'm supposed to come up here and talk about the keys to freedom. But I feel like in order for me to talk about freedom, I have to talk about the lack of freedom that I have gone through in my life and with my addiction. So to start out, like I grew up a pretty decent childhood and stuff, but somehow I fell into addiction because of being in relationships or the crowd of people I was hanging out with, things like that. And I never thought, like, if I would have imagined my life, I would have never imagined I'd be fit in that box where it was like addiction was like the thing. And then it got to a point where it was like I felt like I was serving a life sentence of addiction, and like I was just entrapped in it. I had lost freedom of choice. I had lost really connection with most decent people, lost connection with family, friends, things like that. You know, and I will say, like, I'm not going to get up here and, like, tell all these jail stories because that's not my story. I've never been to prison. I have been arrested. I've been to treatment a lot, like, 7 times. Been to detox a lot. I've been marchman acted multiple times. I don't know if you guys have that here, but a marchman act is basically, like, your family or friends go to the court and say, hey, they're using drugs and we think they're going to kill themselves or hurt themselves because of the way they're using drugs. And then the court gets to say, okay, let's pick them up, and they can either go to treatment or they can go to jail. So some of my arrests were because of that, trying to buck that system, you know. So I do have some experience with like being locked down and losing like freedom, even though the life I was living was not free. So I do have some experience with, like, you know, that, like, this is the time you wake up, this is the time you use the bathroom, this is the time you get to write notes to your family, and this is the time you eat. Like, I do have experience with that. But really, the biggest, I guess, imprisonment I've ever dealt with is the addiction is within my own head, you know, like, feeling like I am just trapped and I have no choice and I have nowhere to go and I have no control of myself or my life because my disease was running me and still today can too if I let it. I do want to touch on the I don't talk about this very often, but I do want to touch on the last little bit of my using, just because it was a really low spot where, like, animal level, lost all choice. My family had finally got to the point where they were like, we can't do this anymore, we're not going to enable you any longer, we're not giving you money, you cannot live here, like, you have to go. And honestly, that's probably the biggest gift my parents ever gave me. Biggest gift, probably why I'm still alive today, other than being a part of this program. But I was, because I had nowhere to go, and I didn't think I was cut out to, like, be homeless, like, on the street. So, of course, the next best thing was, I'm going to live with the dope man. So that's what I did. And it was, like, The first week was fun, and then the next following weeks were terrible. It went from me wanting to be there to being completely controlled, being told, this is what you're going to use, this is how you're going to use it, this is when you're going to use it, being controlled by the drugs, being, literally being controlled, like, can I eat or can I not? Can you do this? Can you do that? Like, you know, and it was just a really sick environment, a sick place to be. And I knew I was really sick at that point because that's the level where I was at. And I knew I was I knew I needed to get out of the situation somehow, but I didn't know how. And I had asked to leave or threatened to leave, but it just didn't happen. Like, I just couldn't actually make myself leave out of the fear of being without or the fear of being sick. So I just was, like, trapped. And one of the times I did try to leave, you know, it's like all my stuff was thrown out in the front yard, and it was like basically taken out in the front yard and intentionally embarrassed in front of a bunch of neighbors. And then it's to the point where, like, now I'm scared, I'm embarrassed and ashamed, and I'm just going to gather all my stuff up and go back in the house anyways, even though I really don't want to be here. Because, like, that's just where I was at. That's how my life was at that time, you know. So how I got out of that situation real quick was I didn't even have a cell phone. But my mom, again, I don't even know how she got the dope man's phone number, but my mom somehow found out the guy's number. So his phone rings. I'm in the bathroom, probably poking myself like a pincushion. But he answers and goes, Chelsea, your mom is on the phone. And I'm like, what? You know, go answer the phone. My mom's on the line. She's like, I'm just calling. I just wanted to make sure you were there. I wanted to make sure you were alive because I hadn't talked to her in I'm getting a little emotional. I hadn't talked to her in almost 6 weeks, and that was, like, the longest I hadn't talked to my mom. And she's like, I just wanted to hear your voice and make sure you're alive. If this is what you're going to do, it's what you're going to do, but I want to make sure you're alive. And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I'm this. And then I was like, wait, idea. I can get out of this. And I was like, what do you mean there's a warrant for my arrest, Mom? What do you mean the cops are looking for me? What do you mean you gave him... You gave the address to where I'm at. Like, none of that happened. My mom's on the other line, like, Chelsea, what the hell is going on? Like, I didn't say anything. Like, what? Are you okay? Like, are you in psychosis? Like, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, okay, sure, I'll go to detox. And, like, she's like, what? You know, she's, like, so confused. I was like, I'll call you later. You know, like, and I hang up the phone. He's like, oh yeah, you got to get the hell up out of here. You can't be at my house. Like, you got a warrant. Cops are coming. Like, we got dope in the house. You got to go. So basically, dope man dropped me off at detox. Best day of my life. best day of my life. And that is where real freedom, like, started, right? So, like, to flip the scripts, like, through treatment, I was introduced to the fellowship. I was introduced to NA. I think treatment serves its purpose. I'm not going to talk down on it, but NA has saved my life, you know? And those people told me, you're going to go to these meetings, you're going to meet these people, you're going to get a sponsor, and, you know, you're an addict, you're going to work these steps, whatever. And I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, whatever. But started going to meetings and being able to, like, sit in a room and go, hi, I'm Chelsea, I'm an addict, and, like, not be ashamed of that, like, that was real freedom for me. Because normally if I talked about my addiction, it was embarrassing, or it's because a family member was talking about it because they were embarrassed of me. So it was like freeing to be able to say, I'm an addict and I need freaking help, you know, and I am so powerless because every time I use, my life goes to shit and I almost die. So, like, just being able to say that and really know that, like, that is so powerful and so freeing, and helps keep me clean today. And you know, the real keys to freedom for me is, like, it's the steps, right? It's the program, which is the steps. Being able to go through the steps and, like step one, of course, we talked about surrender. Then two and three, like, the higher power stuff, like, that's freeing because for me today, like, my higher power is not the same higher power that I grew up with. And for a while, I was agnostic because I struggled with believing in the higher power that I grew up with, because I felt like I could never meet those expectations. So being able to come into the rooms and say, oh, I can, and well, someone tell me, you can pick your own higher power. You can pick, you can, like, this is your choice. This is you. Like, that's so freeing, because the way I connect to my higher power, like, that's between me and my higher power. I get to choose that. The way I, just what my belief system is, like, I get to choose that. I'm not getting told, this is what you do. I'm getting told, hey, what works for you? Like, that's a big deal for someone like me, because I'm extremely rebellious. So you tell me one thing, I'm going to do the opposite. So the fact that I have options and choices here, like, that's freeing. Like, just the freedom of choice. I used to not have choices, and I used to, even if I did have choices, not make good choices. So it's just, it's so different today. But yeah, like, in like step four and five, like working with a sponsor, doing step four and five, being able to put that, all that stuff down on paper and like look at who I really am, what my fears are, how I've harmed people, even how I've been harmed, but how it's still, I put myself in that predicament most of the time, right? Looking at all that stuff, and then also looking at good things about myself too, and then sharing that with somebody else and getting that weight up off of me, that's freedom. Like, the freedom to just be able to go, I'm okay. Like, I'm human. I'm not a bad person. I'm a person, you know? And then, of course, there's the character defects. And I know it talks about in the Living Clean, I'm not going to, like, quote it because I'll get it wrong, but it does say something like freeing ourselves from the defects. Like, that, like, being able to work on the defects or seeing them over time, like, getting to look back and know that they're removed, or at least they're better than they were, like, that's freeing, right? And I still have a lot of defects. It's a lifelong thing. It's not like I'm cured now, because if I was, I wouldn't be here. Like, this is a lifelong thing. And then, like, step 8 and 9 and, like, the amends process for me, honestly, that has been, that is, my first round of steps, for sure, that was, like, my favorite step. And people are like, oh, well, step 4 was this for me. And I'm like, that was step 9 for me. Because I owed a lot of people a lot of things, and I did a lot of harm, especially to my family. And to be able to be around my family today and be able to hold my head high, to know that I can walk the streets and not worry about who I'm going to run into, like, that's a big deal. I don't have to live my life in fear or be scared or nervous or worried because of the shit I've done in the past. Like, because I have amended a lot of it, and I continue to amend it. And I have done financial, living, direct, indirect, whatever I have to do to get it right, you know? And I, with the step 10, the promptly stuff, like, it's not easy, but I am better than I used to about when I do something wrong, making it right a lot, like making it right promptly, quickly, because it doesn't feel good when I do something wrong anymore. I feel bad about it. I feel guilty. I feel ashamed, and I don't like feeling like that, so I got to make it right. And I will touch on something really quick. I originally was not going to share this, but then on the way here, me and someone were talking in the car, and I was like, well, maybe I should. Speaking of the, you know, promptly making amends and getting honest. So I worked in treatment for a little while. Well, actually, I work in treatment again now, but I worked in treatment. I was also married, but while I was, my relationship with who I was married to, it was struggling, and I felt trapped in a relationship. I felt like, well, shit, I got married, and we signed this paper, and now I'm stuck with you. Like, and it was like that trapped feeling, and it was like, it was kind of like, this person is a nice person. She's She was a nice girl. She would treat me good. She was, we had nice things, whatever. But I knew it wasn't it. And if it was it, then ugh, you know? So again, I'm going to go back to, I was working in treatment, and there was a client at the treatment center. And yeah, so that's the direction it went. Me and the client ended up getting together. Within the weekend that it happened, the same weekend I went to my wife and said, we have to get divorced. I have done something wrong. I stepped out on our marriage, and our marriage needs to end. And like, just put it all out there. The Monday, that was so this happened on a Saturday. Talked to my wife about it on Sunday. Monday, I had to go back to work. Talked to my boss about it on Monday. Hey, I have to put in my resignation because this is what happened, and I know I cannot work here because this happened. And as hard as all of that was, it was so scary. Because not only so I'm getting divorced now, I have to find somewhere to live, and I just also lost my job. So boom, all that real quick, ripped the band-aid, I guess. All that happened, but it was freeing because I didn't sit in that stuff. Like, if I would have sat in that and tried to hide it, it would have festered, and who knows, I might have gone high, you know, but I didn't. And I was able to get honest, say what I did. And, you know, some people were like, that's no good. Like, you're ruining your life. You're going to relapse. You're going to fuck up. You're going to do this. Guess what? None of that's happened. So I actually became more independent through that process. I got a new job. I got my own place. Still dating the client. She's right there. We're together, both clean. And here I am in Mississippi talking to you guys. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, was it wrong? Absolutely. What I did was absolutely not, I did not handle that the right way. I stepped out on somebody. I was totally self-will, like, was taking the lead there, and I was all up in my character defects. They were running the show. But doesn't mean I got high over it. I just turned it all around, you know? And the program, if it weren't for the program, I wouldn't have handled that situation that way. And that is freedom too. Like, the program has given me that. Like, this, when you mess up, this is how we fix it. This is how we do things. Because I have options today, options I've never had before. And I do want to just read this really quick. So it says, this is from the Living Clean, in the Keys to Freedom section. It says, our self-made prisons no longer serve us. We are free to explore and discover what we are good at. We are free to participate, create, care, and share, surprise ourselves, take risks, be vulnerable, and stand on our own two feet. We find our beliefs and begin to act on them. We make decisions based on our values. We walk through fear and wake up to the miracles that surround us. We are free to be who we are and live as we choose. And, like, I thought that was a really powerful little part in there because, like, that's how I want to live my life today. And that's how I get to live my life today. However, I will say, I still have a tendency to put myself in a box. I still have a tendency to put myself in this self-made prison of, I'm not good enough, or I can't actually accomplish that. But it's not true. Like, that is just my disease lying to me. Because if I can stand here right now today and be clean after some of the stuff I've been through in my life, then why am I putting a cap on myself? Like, I can do whatever I want to do. And I've seen other people in the rooms do all kinds of things that they never thought they could do. So there's the hope shot too. Like, why could they, but I couldn't? No, we all can, you know? But yeah, like, the program as a whole, has given me freedom. And like I said, I just want to emphasize, like, the real keys to freedom for me are the steps. And the more I work them, and the more I'm honest, and the more I put pen to paper, the more free I get. And that's all I have.
That's some good shit, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. Our next speaker sounds like he's from Hole in the Wall, but
yeah, this is what it is.
Hole in the Wall.
Hole in the Wall, whatever they
call it. Close enough.
Hole in the Wall, Tennessee. Please welcome Trey.
All right, man. I'm an addict. My name is Trey. First of all, I want to tell y'all how grateful I am for y'all helping me stay clean today, because I can't do this by myself. So I mean that from the bottom of my heart. My clean date is September the 8th, 2021. So when they first asked me to do this, it was Keys to Freedom, and I was thinking, man, there's so much I could talk about. But like Chelsea was talking about, man, early in my life, I didn't know what freedom was. I went to prison for the first time when I was 19, and I kept going to prison all the way till I was 37 years old. And I used to think that when I get out of prison, I'd be free. And then I would think, well, if I get off paper, I'll be free. And I just never could get to that, and that's why I couldn't feel free. And then finally, one day it happened. I got off paper, and I still didn't feel free. You know, I thought about what I could find in the literature to talk about freedom, and I opened my book and I turned it toward the step start, because like her, I think the steps have a lot to do with it. And I read the first two words of step one, and it said, "We admitted," and I had to stop right there, because "we admitted" means we got honest. I don't know about y'all, man, but in my act of addiction, I didn't live in any kind of honesty. I lived in chaos. You know, I'm upside down on my pack. He owes me, and I can't call. He won't answer the phone, but I got to get the money to get him to call her. But I told them two different lies. So I got to make sure they don't talk to each other. And then I got in a gunfight with him, but I got to get him to go. There's no freedom in there, whether on paper or not. You know, so we admitted we were powerless over our addiction, our lives become unmanageable. I got honest about a few things, and what I did was I found out that I didn't have to hide anymore. I found out I didn't have to live a lie. Once I admit something, I'm not a prisoner to it anymore. You know, in early recovery, I didn't understand how freeing that was. I learned it as I went through the steps. You know, in step one, I got honest and I surrendered, like Chelsea was talking about. You know, I put it down and, I admitted I was powerless, but that left a void in here. Without continuing through the steps, that void would fill up with something else. What it's always filled up with. And when we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore sanity, that's talking about hope. And I want to use an analogy here. So, you know, y'all have heard you got to crawl before you can walk, right? Well, there's a part that gets left out of that story an awful lot, and it's got to be carried before you can crawl. And at least that was true for me. You know, and the analogy I want to use, you take a little baby, it's looking, it's sitting on the floor, and it's watching its parents walk around, and it's watching its parents do all this stuff, and it hopes it can do it one day. It don't know what it takes to do it, but it hopes it can. And that's what I got in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I saw other people that were telling my story that were able to stay clean, and I knew that if it could happen for them, it could happen for me, and I found hope like that. You know, when I got into step three, when I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, I understood Him. You know, that hope turned into something else. Because what it required me to do was take an action. And that hope, well, the honesty gave me the freedom to hope, and that hope gave me the freedom to take a step out on what?
Faith.
You know, if you take that same little baby that's hoping it can walk one day, but it don't know how to do it, and it finally gets up the courage, and it comes over and it gets up on the table and it starts to take that first step out on faith, it don't know if the table, if the floor is going to cave in, if its legs are going to work, it don't know if it's going to fall. But it takes a step out on faith. And it does it because it saw other people do it. And it don't fall. And it takes another step, and then another step, and then another step. But then it does fall. You know, just like we all do. You know, the courage and humility to admit what the truth is, you know, in step four. You know, I fell a little bit. I don't know about y'all, but I took a little bit of a fall there. But those same people that gave me hope and early recovery, just like the same people that gave the baby hope when it was taking a first step on faith. When the baby fell, they were there to pick it up. And that honesty that turned to hope, that turned to faith, has now turned to trust, because I'm able to trust another human being. You know, I started hanging around trustworthy people, and that gave me the freedom to trust them. Now, I don't know about y'all, but in my active addiction, I already knew he's trying to get me. Now, I'm going to get you. You know, you better get the jump on me, because I will shoot you first. And that's the way I lived. No freedom in that, right? Now I got to start talking about what's wrong with me and those character defects. That surrender in step one, when I admitted I was powerless, that spiritual principle, you know, it gave me freedom there. And then that surrender in step three, it gave me freedom from worrying about what was going to happen next. Because as long as I do, you know, and I've heard people say to try to do the next right thing, and that makes a lot of sense to me, but I don't know about y'all, I'm still crazy as hell, and I don't know, I always know what the right thing is. But I heard this shared from somebody else, I'm not going to take credit for it, but what he told me was, and I don't know what the next right thing is, I'm going to do the next loving thing. And when I do the next loving thing, that's towards me as well, not just other people, me as well. And if I try to do that, man, I find out I don't really have to worry about what's coming, because my past is nothing but my memories, and my future is nothing but my imagination. The truth right now in this very second are the things that's preparing me for my purpose. What's going on right now is where the lesson is. And if I do the next loving thing or the next right thing right now, I know I'm in God's will. I don't have to worry about what it is. You know, my sponsor tells me all the time, and I want to slap the shit out of him about 50% of the conversations we have, but it's because I love him, he loves me. But he tells me, Trey, you got to get out of results business. There's no faith in praying for God's will if you've already decided what you want the answer to be. And there's no freedom in that either. There's absolutely no freedom in that either. Because I'm still in my will wanting something, right? And in step six, I got to become entirely ready to have these defensive characters removed. And that's a different kind of surrender. I'm not just surrendering to God's will. I'm surrendering what's wrong with me to Him to let Him fix it, because I can't do it. I got all the evidence in the world that I can't do it. I go to prison. I hurt people. I steal from people. I cheat on my spouse. You know, whatever you got, it's already mine. You just don't know it yet. That's what I do. I need something more powerful than me, and I got to surrender to that. In step six, you know, my character defects. And in step seven, when I got to humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings, that humility in that. For me, the difference between a character defect and a shortcoming is pretty simple. At least for me. I can't speak for anyone else. But for me, a character defect would be like having a flat tire on my car. And a shortcoming is getting in the car and driving down the road with it. So my character defects are what's wrong with me. My shortcomings are what happens when I act out on what's wrong with me. And there's definitely no freedom in that. You know, I can stand outside. My good friend Mo, I wish he was here today, but he had to work. My good friend Mo talks about it all the time. If you stand outside a bank and you think about robbing it, you probably got a character defect acting up right there. But they're not going to take you to jail. When you pull out the gun and you say, give me the money, there's your shortcoming. And they're going to come get you pretty quickly. And there definitely ain't no freedom in that. You know, I was looking for freedom in all these different ways. And, you know, I was looking for God, too. And I want to throw this little tidbit in there because it's very important to me. It's the corner of my story. It's the corner of why I'm still clean today. I looked for God and all the hate, resentment, fear, self-centeredness, anger. I looked for Him in all that for all those years. In the penitentiaries, in the mental hospitals, on the streets. You know, in the freaking homeless shelters, I looked for God and all that mess, and I could never find Him there. And then I got mad at Him for not being there. You know, I lost a daughter to this disease. I've lost a brother to this disease. I've lost countless friends to this disease. I've had countless friends that spent the rest of their life in prison because of this disease. And I wanted to find somebody to blame, and I picked God to be who I was going to get to blame there. And I was mad at Him for not being there. If you exist, why do you allow this stuff to happen? And there definitely was no freedom in that. But, you know, I remember the spiritual awakening I had. I was in a treatment center, and I walked to the front of the room. And after all those years, all that stuff happening, I took my only coping skill away, and that was the dope. And I was left with what I'd never dealt with my entire life, which was anything. And it put me on my knees. And I remember the moment when I had the thought. I looked up and I thought, whatever you are, please kill me or help me. I can't do this. and the truth became pretty apparent. You don't find God in a problem. The basic text, I remember years ago in one of the penitentiaries I was in, they had H&I that would come in, and we would use it as a place to gather so we could sell our dope to each other, because they wouldn't let us together or anything. But the book was there, so I picked it up and I turned it to the introduction, and it said, "There have been many books written about the disease of addiction," and I laid it down. Well, years later, I started working steps, and I picked that book back up. And luckily, my sponsor didn't tell me to skip anything. He said, "Read from the blank page all the way through." And I read the rest of that paragraph. It said, "This book is primarily focused on the nature of recovery." So it told me to stop looking at the problem and look for a solution. And that's freedom right there. If I'm staring at a problem, I'm never going to freaking do anything about it. As a matter of fact, staring at the problem is what turns me into a victim. If I stare at the problem, I keep that victim mentality. I'm not going to do anything but sit there and feel sorry for myself and justify my behavior and continue on. You know, insanity. We talked about, me and Dee, my good friend, we're talking about insanity a while ago, something he had done, but 4 years clean. Anyway, you know, insanity to me used to be doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. But somewhere along the way, I graduated to a whole major league of insanity, because I would do the same thing over and over, knowing what the result is and doing it anyway. And there's definitely no freedom in that. I got it at 8-step, and I remember trying to figure out who to put it on there. And my sponsor kept telling me, "Look, man, just write what you think. Write what you feel. It'll come to you if it's time for you." Now, everybody you've ever met probably needs to go on there eventually, but we can't deal with all that at one time. We can't deal with all that today. Have some faith. You say you got faith. Let God give you what you're ready for. So I made that list, and that was a tough list to make, man. We talk about step 4 like it's the monster. 6 through 9's got mine. I don't know about y'all. 6 through 9 told me the truth about some shit I didn't want to admit. You know, that honesty in step 1, I found out when I got to step 6, I wasn't being as honest as I thought I was being. Because I still wanted to justify some of my behavior from the past, right? But in step 8, I got to make a list of all people I had harmed and came willing to make amends to them all. And when I'm making that list, I find out that a lot of people I had in my 4th step was on my 8th step. Which is a good thing, right? And I got to step 9, and I remember I was able to make a financial amends. I remember the feeling I had, because I worked in a treatment center as well. I still do to this day. And I started to understand what that word I've been searching for my whole life actually was when I say freedom. Because I was able to forgive myself. And I can't think of a better word to describe freedom than forgiveness. I don't know about y'all. You know, I learned how to forgive myself and to forgive others. And I found out when I was forgiving others, a lot of those people I tried to forgive, they didn't do anything wrong to begin with. You know, I blamed God. And I found out in my case, in my life, I can't speak for anybody else. You know, people say God won't put you through more than you can handle. Well, it's been my experience that there's all kind of stuff I can't handle. What I found out to be the truth in my life is God didn't put me through anything. What happens is God, there's nothing He can't handle. He don't put me through stuff. He gets me through stuff. But I have to be willing to ask Him to do that. I have to be willing to fully surrender and become humble and practice humility. You know, the root word of humility is human. And it's okay to be human. I got some freedom when I realized that. Now, that says in our literature that step 9, you know, it frees us from the wreckage of our past. And then I got to step 10, and when I get to continue to take personal inventory on wrong problem, that frees me from the wreckage of my present. I've heard that from another speaker, y'all. I'm not taking credit for it, but, you know, it's not about me anyway. It's not about who says it. It's about what's being said. It's not about, you know, what's going on up here. It's about the message that's coming through. And I'm doing my best just to get out of God's way and let Him speak today. I also find out when I try to prepare too much for this kind of stuff, my ego gets involved. So I'm kind of winging it a little bit. That step 11, you know, I made a conscious contact with God. You know, I used to play some music. Mason was making fun of me a little bit about something I did. But you know what? It's funny now. It wasn't at the time, but it is now. But anyway, you know, I could play in front of a room full of people like this and I would feel completely alone. Can y'all relate to that? I could be in a room full of people, a crowded people, and I could feel completely alone. And I found out the reason for that was because I had to be whoever I had to be in any relationship to get what I wanted. And when I wear enough masks, somewhere along the line I forget who I actually am. You know, I got to take those masks off and have a conscious contact with God and my understanding. And I can be sitting in my living room by myself now and know I'll never be alone again. Wearing those masks, it sets me up for failure because I can't live up to the thing I'm trying to prove I am. When I take those masks off and I allow myself just to be who I am, I practice humility and I'm okay with that. I forgive myself. I forgive others. I do that kind of thing. I'm free from all that mess. It also talks about it in what she was reading. I'm glad she, I thought she was going to read what I was going to bring up, but it kind of goes together well. I think it's on page 13. It might be page 11 of the Living Clean book, but it talks about, you know, the keys of freedom. If you want to know what they are, it says the spiritual principle of Narcotics Anonymous allows us to free ourselves so we can be ourselves. The steps, I agree with you 100%. The spiritual principles within the steps and the traditions, those are the keys to my freedom. When I got to step 12 and I continued to take personal, well, when I got to step 12 and I, after having a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I tried to carry the message to addicts, practice principles, all my fears. You know, that the biggest spiritual principle that affects me in that step, it might be different from others, but it's about freaking gratitude. Because what is gratitude? It's an action word, right? What am I grateful for? And then what am I going to do to show my gratitude? In a 12th step, I'm grateful for my recovery and my new way of life. And to show it, I'm going to give it to somebody else. You want to talk about freedom? You know, I blame God for taking my daughter Amber. And I was an angry, angry person. It talks about it in our literature that the spiritual of our message is hope and our promise is freedom. You know, before I found this program, I hated God every minute of every day for taking my daughter. After finding this program and working through the steps with a sponsor and staying clean just one more day at a time, I wake up every day and I thank Him from the bottom of my heart for every minute I had with her. That's what this program has done for me. That's what gratitude is. That's what honesty and hope and faith and commitment and courage and trust and all these spiritual principles, man, that's what they bring me, man. And the greatest thing about the spiritual principles of Narcotics Anonymous, they will never stand in contrast to each other. Each one makes the next one better. Each one makes the next one mean something more. You know, I wake up every day, and I've heard this said before, and I try to do this. I try to get God in my head before I get in there, because unfortunately, I don't wake up with a spiritual cape on flying around the room, like I wish I did. But you know what, man? The minute I find some gratitude, everything just changes. It's just like a big freaking weight comes off of my shoulders, and I'm able to see the blessings I have, and I'm able to learn from the lessons I'm given. And I don't have to freaking get high today. I don't care what happens today. Mason says it all the freaking time. I don't care. I ain't got to get high today. You want to talk about freedom? No matter what, I don't have to freaking get high today. Can I hear somebody say that? No matter what. I ain't got to get high today. I don't care what happens today. If they come at me for six sealed diamonds from 1992 from a bank I did rob or something, I ain't got to get high today. Amen. If my fiance leaves me for another man, I ain't got to get high today.
Amen.
No matter what. If LSU locks up and beats Clemson a week from tomorrow, I ain't got to get high today. But I don't want to either. Because an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose desire to use, and find a new way to live. I'm going to close with this right here. My brother, Jimmy Ray, we were born to the same parents in Greenville, South Carolina. We had the same affiliations with criminal organizations. We went to the same penitentiaries. We had the same friends. We had the same habits. We had the same story. In 2023, on Thanksgiving Day, they found my brother dead in the woods in North Carolina. And the reason they found him was because he started to stink. Nobody missed him. On that day, they called me at my job at a treatment center to let me know what had happened. The only difference between my brother Jimmy Ray and me is I found Narcotics Anonymous and he didn't. I don't think it can get much clearer than that. Once again, what I want to do is I want to, from the bottom of my heart, the gratitude I have for everybody in this room, man, thank y'all for helping me stay clean today. I mean that so much. It's just an amazing feeling to be around a bunch of people just like me that's found a new way to live. Thank you, Chelsea, for sharing your message of hope. Man, that was awesome. You kind of inspired me to get going a little bit. And thank y'all for coming today, man. I love y'all, and that's all I got. Thanks for letting me share it.